Hello, my name is James Puglio, retired Department of State Director for in the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs.
Hi, my name is Mary Helen Carlson. I'm retired from the Office of the Legal Advisor at the State Department.
Greetings, I'm Tom Burrows from the U.S. Department of Justice, the Office of International Affairs. During the period of time when we were negotiating the TIP protocol and working on the TVPA legislation, I was the deputy section chief at the Child Exploitation and Obscenity Unit of the Criminal Division at DOJ.
And I was in the Office of Law Enforcement and Intelligence in the Office of the Legal Advisor during the negotiations.
And they were our legal advisors during this whole process and remain so afterwards. We also wanted, it would be remiss if we didn't talk about one of the more important persons who provided us substantial guidance through the important parts of the negotiation, Deputy Assistant Secretary Elizabeth Verville, who guided us to the culmination of negotiations in October of 2000. I'd like to briefly talk about the events that led us to submitting the protocol in November of 1998. The important world events that led us to introduce this trafficking protocol. The end of the Soviet Union saw a rise in transnational organized crime in Western Europe and to a lesser extent in the United States. To address this, the G8 under the Canadian presidency in 1996 established a group to address transnational organized crime. It was divided into two sections, the attorneys and the practitioners. I was part of the practitioner unit covering migrant smuggling and document fraud. Part of this rise in transnational organized crime was a rise in trafficking of women from the former Soviet Union, mainly from Russia, Ukraine, and Moldova, to Western Europe and to the United States, particularly in New York, New Jersey, and Florida. During that time, I briefed my boss, Deputy Assistant Secretary Jonathan Weiner, and suggested using the word trafficking to distinguish these victims from the smuggled migrants. He liked the idea and told me I told him that I would look for a definition. I searched Black's Law and found none. I then asked the Office of Legal Counsel, OLC, at the Department of Justice to do some research for me to see if they can find the definition for trafficking. They also came up with none. During the same period from 1996 to 1998, the attorneys working group were discussing the possibility of introducing an international convention to combat trafficking and transnational organized crime. In February 1998, a meeting was held in Warsaw to review the Polish draft of the convention. During the same period, Italy and Austria were working on a draft smuggling protocol. During May 1998, Jonathan asked me to accompany him to the UN Vienna International Crime Center, the VIC, to work on a trafficking resolution. I said, of course, yes, and had no idea what he was talking about. But with the help of a lawyer from Mary Helen's office, we came up with a draft resolution that I took my floppy disk, I'm showing my age now, and was off to Vienna to work on the resolution in May 1998. We were able to get a draft resolution down to one page, and I had 10 countries co-submitting the resolution, the G8 countries plus two others. I also assisted the Italian and Austrian delegations work on their smuggling resolution. Four resolutions were completed during this May time period, one for the Transnational Organized Crime Convention, one for smuggling, one for trafficking, and one for firearms. In June 1998, Mary Helen joined the team. Thank you.
As Jim has alluded to, the main convention, the UN Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, and the three supplemental protocols, one of them, the Trafficking in Persons Protocol, was negotiated under the offices of the UN Office of Drugs and Crime. The negotiations went on for two years, 1999 and most of 2000. And the convention and the protocols, or most of the protocols, were signed in December 2000 in Palermo, Sicily. This was incredibly fast. It might not sound that way to other people who aren't used to negotiating treaties. This was really fast for a convention and protocols of this size. Jim, why don't you talk about the purpose?
The purpose of this was to get unified structure among countries to combat trafficking in persons, not only the recipient countries, but also the sending countries. It was important for us to define the issue so that there was a clear understanding of what constituted trafficking in persons.
I would like to comment on one thing that Mary Helen said about the difficulty of negotiating the three protocols at the same time as the main convention. There were different players negotiating in different rooms at the same time, and we often had questions in the protocol negotiations. I joined in the first round in January 1999 about what would be in the main convention and how those would be incorporated into the protocols. For example, the sections on international cooperation, whether we needed to have our own international cooperation articles in the protocol, or whether we should rely on the main convention. And the Spanish delegate made a famous comment once that has stuck with me for 20 years. He said, negotiating the main convention and three protocols at the same time, like giving birth to a mother and her triplets all at once. And it was a little bit like that at times, but it was a very interesting process. But, you know, we were trying to arrive at an instrument that would require criminalization of trafficking in persons. At that time, there were only about four that had comprehensive trafficking laws in 1999. And so that was one of the main goals, as well as to protect and assess victims, and also to promote international cooperation to combat.
Mary Ellen, we should talk a little bit about the time period between June, when you came, it didn't work for me, and November, when we sent the U.S. draft to the UN VIC. It's important that we talk about our meeting with people who worked on this issue in the Washington area and got their views, with the one caveat that whatever they gave us may not be included as part of the protocol. But we were open to all comments and suggestions.
Well, and we also discovered that the non-governmental organizations had very differing points of view. There are two camps. And I think that leads us in to the definition, Jim. Is that where we should go now, I think?
Yeah, I think it's important. And since, Tom, you spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in meetings. And I think this was the second last article that was agreed upon in the total 2-year period. Why don't you cover that part of it?
Sure, thank you. Well, the definition of trafficking in persons has essentially three aspects to it. One is an action such as recruitment or transporting or harboring a person. Second is the means by which that is accomplished. And some of the examples in the definition are force and coercion, fraud, deception, abuse of power. And then the third aspect to the definition is that the purpose of the act has to be for exploitation, sexual exploitation, or forced labor, forced provision of services. But Mary Helen, why don't you tell us why this was so difficult to negotiate? What the one of the big points of contention?
It sure was difficult. I would say the most difficult, as you said, the most difficult issue. It was because of differing laws among the countries about prostitution. Some countries wanted the definition of prostitution to include all forms of prostitution, while others objected to the inclusion of so-called voluntary prostitution because prostitution was legal in some of these countries. And the non-governmental organizations were strenuously opposed, some of them, to including all forms of prostitution, and others were strenuously opposed to the opposite. So, Tom, you were very involved in how we finally worked this out at the last minute. Why don't you explain that?
Sure. First of all, the process was quite interesting. We must have had dozens of meetings at lunchtime during all the negotiating sessions. I think we negotiated the protocol 11 different weeks throughout 2000 and the 99 and 2000. But every session included side meetings during the long lunch break that we took, which was for the purpose of doing these consultations, side meetings on the definition of trafficking. We were not able to resolve the definition of trafficking until the lunch break, the last day of negotiations, a Friday in October. And the way that we did it was with about 25 countries in the room, a large conference room at lunchtime, discussing how we resolve this issue of, especially concerning prostitution. We had to come up with some phrase in the means that would be sufficiently ambiguous to satisfy everyone. And the phrase that we came up with was for the means that would be used to get an individual into this exploitative situation would be abuse of vulnerability. And that was the key phrase that resolved this issue. We had a very strong delegate from Germany who came up with that phrase, and it carried the day. And we went in at 3 o'clock. We first some of us met with some of the delegations that did not attend the lunchtime session, kind of preview it for them and socialize this new definition. The definition. And they were happy with it. So we went in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and introduced the language. And there was one comment, but it was adopted finally after 2 years of negotiations, which was quite a victory and allowed us to finish and come up with a term that got widespread support in the end.
And there was also a useful comment in the explanatory report that said that protocol was not meant to dictate how countries treated prostitution under their domestic law.
Yeah. I remember the one delegate who wanted to make a change to one of the words and the incredible speech given by our colleague from Pakistan, who said that your group had been working on this for 2 years and even changing a comment would destroy the incredible work that you guys did. So I hope you do remember that as vividly as I do.
Yeah, it's certainly difficult and important.
Yeah.
We also had very strong leadership from our chair from Brazil during that time. He was really helpful. I wish I could remember his name, but I don't. It's been years before.
Yeah.
He certainly was. Victim services was also a major issue. You know, we didn't know the definition of trafficking till the very end, and therefore, we didn't know the breadth of the victim class because we didn't know who's going to be included in the definition. So we didn't know the class until the very end, and countries weren't willing to commit to victim services and benefits until after the definition was agreed upon. And Tom, the victim services is an important part of the protocol. Maybe you could address that.
Well, the victim services are unfortunately there's a lot of discretion for member states in terms of providing housing, providing medical care and so forth, they do, under the convention, have to be protected from intimidation or retaliation from the predators, from the persons who exploited them. That is required. And as witnesses, they have to be protected as well from intimidation. But the protocol's requirements are not hard and fast requirements. There's a lot of discretion about how to provide services and whether, for example, to consider, I think the protocols just give consideration to allowing residents in the state of the victimization so that they could stay and cooperate against the traffickers and also be protected by from them. So, but what's interesting, though, is that at the same time we were working on the protocol, which finally was adopted in October 2000, and then, as Mary Helen said, was signed by over 100 countries in Palermo in December. At the same time that was going on, we were working on the Trafficking Victims Protection Act 2000. We had been working on that 1998. We had a working group, interagency working group, putting together proposals, and we actually surpassed the requirements of the protocol in terms of victim services. And one way that we did that, provide for a visa for trafficking victims, which has been used and granted hundreds of times to allow victims of trafficking first to have temporary residence in the United States, and then after a period of time, they could permanent residence. Also, at the same time, because we were working on the issue, realized that there was another need for other crime victims to have a visa that was included in the trafficking legislation that was called a U visa for victims. It was intended really for victims of violence. And that has also been used times since that legislation was passed. We actually had the legislation in place before the U.S. had become a party. The U.S. didn't become a party to the UNCLOS. It took time to put together a ratification package, big interagency effort to get that to the White House. Then it goes to Congress, to the Senate, where it has to be, they have to give their advice and consent. And there were hearings on it with witnesses testifying about what the required. And finally, in 2005, we were able to deposit our instruments of ratification to the UN so that they were into force with regard to the United States.
There was strong support from the administration and Congress. There wasn't much opposition to this. And one of the reasons that the whole process went so fast was because of that strong support. And the both the Trafficking Victims Protection Act and the protocol were signed, and the main convention were signed in the year 2000. And that's really, really unusual to have. Sometimes it takes years to get implementing legislation, or you never get it at all, and we can't become a party. So this was really fast, and that reflected the strong support across the board.
Yeah, the members and staffers were interested in hearing from us on what we were doing in the negotiations of the protocol. I remember one session we had with, I think it was a particular member and his staff, about the sanctions that they were thinking of adding to the TVPA. And we asked them to reconsider that because it was important for us to help the sending countries who would be most affected by any sanctions provision. And they were, and the member and his staff were quite interested in our comments. And I believe they removed that from the legislation, but incorporated the TIP report that is done by Department of State every year as a result. So we have to give kudos to those members who actually were interested in what we were doing in the protocol and were listened to some of our comments. So I think that was an important part of the two-year process that we went through. And I dare say, speaking for all of us, we would go through again if asked.
It was a real honor to be part of that process.
Indeed, it was one of the highlights of my career, I would say. And working with the two of you was really a pleasure as well. really had a good team along with Liz, and we did good work.
Yeah, we did.
And it's having a lasting effect. And Tom, we were talking about the victim services and cooperation. Can you tell us how that's working out? Well, you mentioned how the T and the U visas, but what about the international cooperation?
Well, it's been the UNTOC, as it's known, the UN Transnational Organized Crime Convention, a great tool for Department of Justice to get cooperation in criminal cases. You know, there are 190 parties now to the UN Organized Crime
Convention. That's an incredible number.
Jim, I remember having a conversation with you, and we're sitting, and it might have been during the migrant smuggling negotiation rather than the tip. But I remember you and I looking at each other and saying, there is no way we're going to have 40 parties to this protocol, and it may never enter into force because you needed 40 to have it enter into force. Yep. But now the migrant smuggling protocol has, I believe, 140 parties, and the trafficking protocol, 178, which means countries have, and they're going to be reviewed soon on this. They have criminalized trafficking in persons for the most part, maybe not perfectly, but they've certainly made great strides in that area. But the main convention, the Organized Crime Convention, the DOJ has used over 1,000 times now.
Wow.
For mutual legal assistance and extradition in organized crime cases, which in both incoming cases, outgoing cases, it's been a huge asset for us. And so it's really was a great accomplishment that the negotiators achieved back in 99 and
2000. Yeah, that was one bet I was glad to lose.
So this, the main convention on organized crime plus this protocol has had a major impact. Prior to the protocol, there were many countries who did not, in so many terms, criminalize trafficking. And that has been a major accomplishment as a result. They now have done so. And that has been a major result of this protocol in the main convention. And even though, as Tom mentioned, there were a number of cases where the victim services requirement said as appropriate, as opposed to the mandatory word shall, many countries have gone ahead and adopted those discretionary measures, and it's making a world of difference. So it was a very satisfying project to be involved in. And yeah. Concluded with a magical, almost ceremony in Palermo, Sicily. As you recall, we had Zubin Mehta, the leading in orchestra, yeah. Playing the Ode to Joy.
Yes.
Yeah, playing Beethoven's Ninth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will tell this anecdote about our Palermo experience. I was with an Italian delegate who grew up in Palermo at the ceremony at the opera house in Palermo during the signing ceremony. And she had tears in her eyes because for 20 years, the opera house had been closed for renovations. And the reason they couldn't get it renovated is because the mafia kept stealing the money that was allocated for the renovation of the Palermo Opera House. But when we were there signing the Organized Crime Convention, it was stunning. It was so beautiful. I mean, it was just an amazing job they did renovating it. And I think that showed the decrease of the influence of the mafia, more the effectiveness of prosecution in Italy that took place in the 1990s. You know, I also wanted to add about the TVPA, the legislation in the U.S. Jim mentioned, you know, there about what the sanctions would mean and whether that would inhibit cooperation and so forth. But the compromise that was reached to have the State Department do an analysis of every country's anti-trafficking efforts and put them in tiers, 1, 2, and 3. And I think there's a 2B now as well. That has made a huge difference. In my experience, countries are really anxious not to be in tier 3. And when they get to tier 2, they were really anxious to move up to tier 1. And it really led to some very significant changes in how countries dealt with trafficking in persons and continues to make a difference. Now the State Department is evaluating not only whether the laws are in place, but whether they're actually being enforced. Yeah. They're counting convictions, counting prosecutions, counting investigations. Yeah. I think it's been a really useful piece of legislation.
Yeah, I did the first tip report. It was one of my last duties when I was the State Department. I can't tell you how many ambassadors I had on the phone screaming at me that they were in tier three. So, yeah. I mean, to have the head of, delegation, the ambassador call you up shows you, as you said, the importance that the tip report has, and the fact that if you're a tier three country, it actually means something. And I think it's important also that when you were talking about the legislation, Mary Helen, countries enacting legislation to criminalize trafficking, I think it was important that because we stressed that the protocol would be the least they should do. And that was something that was agreed upon. So kudos to us again for something we just brought up in comment during our negotiations.
Well, again, it really was an honor to work with you guys and was one of the high points of my career as well. And it's so wonderful that the protocol has had such a lasting impact.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a few minutes left. Is there anything else we think we need to bring up? Or okay, Tom, what about the work you're still doing on the protocol? I mean, you're still in government. You're still associated with this.
Well, since I don't work on trafficking specifically, I now work on more broadly on international cooperation matters. Mm-hmm. But I have stayed active on the Palermo Convention because I'm such a big fan of it. So since 2010, I've been the chairperson of the International Cooperation Working Group under the UNCTAD Conference of Parties. So we meet just about once a year to go over issues in international cooperation, how we can make better use of the convention, and the convention as it relates to, because the convention applies to all the protocols. And that's a very interesting group. And not only is it interesting because we come out with good recommendations that countries can follow, but it's also great for networking and getting to know my counterparts from around the world. And I really feel honored that they've kept me in the chair for so long. But it's been a real pleasure, and it's allowed me to stay active with UNTAC and really see how it's developed. There are many other countries using it very extensively, corruption cases and all kinds of other organized crime. So it's been a great pleasure to see it develop like that. And we're now beginning the review mechanism process. It took a while to get the review mechanism off the ground, but there will be country by country reviews conducted by peers and reports done concerning the extent of their evaluation of both the main convention and the protocols. The process got a little bit delayed, I think, with the pandemic, but should be starting by the end of this year.
So the evaluation is what they're doing to meet the requirements of the protocol and convention? Is that in essence?
Do they have the legislation in place? Mm-hmm. Are they actually using the legislation? Are there problems that they're finding? Because the evaluation also assists in deciding what kind of technical assistance is needed. If you recall from the negotiations, technical assistance is a significant issue that we dealt with. Identifying the gaps in countries' implementation helps guide UNODC and the donor countries like the U.S. as to how they need to provide assistance and where they need to provide assistance and what type of assistance is necessary. So I think the review mechanism should be a very helpful development as well.
Great.
You know, while we were talking, I Googled how many countries are there in the world today. And, we just said 190 countries are party to the convention. Is that right?
Yes.
And how many were there party to the protocol as well?
178.
Well, there are 195 countries in the world.
Wow.
That doesn't include territories, disputed territories, territories and dependencies, but of sovereign nations, 195 and 190 of them, and then just a few less than that parties to the convention and the protocol. That's amazing.
Yeah. You can count on one hand how many are not.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Wow.
But we all, I also just want to point out, this was, the U.S. played a leadership role in this, but we had tremendous help from other countries. Yeah. I mean, there was leadership being shown by Sweden, by Italy, by the Netherlands, by Germany, Mexico. We had a tremendous, Argentina, they, along with the U.S., had the first draft of the convention, each draft, competing drafts that were then merged. We had so much support from our colleagues in Vienna. And that was one of the great experiences. It helped make me want to continue doing multilateral work in the United Nations, because I so much appreciated the wisdom and effort of my colleagues, our colleagues from other countries in Vienna that helped make this happen.
Yeah, the interaction among us was incredible. I remember a conversation I had with the Iranian delegate about our elections in 2000. He asked me if I knew who was going to win, and I said, of course not. And he said, we have to have strong elections in Iran. And I was thinking, is this something you can say? The only place you can say it is in the UN, like the plenary session. So our interaction with the other delegates was an incredible life experience, to me anyway.
Well, you know, and I was remiss in not mentioning the Holy See, which played a pivotal role in resolving the conflict over the definition of trafficking.
Yeah.
The Monsignor, and I don't recall his name either, but he was really helpful in bridging the gap between the two camps.
Yeah, there was an offending paragraph that he came to me and said, Jim, if that paragraph remains, we're going to lose the protocol. So I asked someone from our delegation to call back and speak to the undersecretary to say even the Holy See is against it. And we were able to take it off the table because of that comment he made. So, yes, he played a very important part, the Monsignor.
Yeah.
Well, our session is almost over. Time is flying by. But I just want to thank you guys for joining us. It's great that we got together. Too bad it took us 20 years to talk about our work and the protocol so fully. But as we all said, we would do it again. And we had a great time, not only the working with you guys, but also the subject matter that we covered. I think was incredibly important, as we see just by the signatory numbers of countries.
Well, thank you. It was a real pleasure, Jim and
Likewise.
Mary Helen.
Likewise. It was nice to see you guys again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to end the recording.
And thanks to all those who will watch this.
Yes.
We hope you learned something.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.